Welcome to Building Fortunes Radio. Make sure you check us out at buildingfortunesradio.com. Along with our marketing partners, we're here to help our PM Marketing Network Lead customers build their businesses and make the world a better place. At Building Fortunes, we know how much your business means to you and the people important to you. So spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world. Now on to our show with your host, Peter Mingles.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You're listening to us on Building Fortunes Radio. It's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. It's Saturday night, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 7:30 p.m. on the Central side, and we are here every Saturday for a really long time. It's been a long time, 8-9 years maybe, on Building Fortunes Radio with a good friend of ours. His name is Scott Johnson. This is actually Scott's show. And for those people that are wondering, how did this all get started? Scott called me after I did a radio show with a couple of other gentlemen, Roger Van Vlissingen and E. Robert Smith, about the anti-stuff relative to MLM. And I'm basically pro-MLM when done right, and anti-MLM, of course, when done wrong. And just like every other industry that I've ever been associated with it, you know, there's good stuff and there's bad stuff. So when I was looking to do something with home-based businesses, I wanted to make sure that we had a platform to be able to promote and show people how to do things the right way, and that's how we get started with Building Fortunes Radio. I was always listening and aware of some of the critical stuff that was going on, and when Roger was writing for Seeking Alpha, I asked him to be on the show. Well, Scott found out about that show, listened in, called me back and said, you know, that was a good show, but there's something that most people don't talk about. And I said, what's that, Scott? He said, the tool scam associated with MLM. And for those regular listeners, you probably are familiar with that, what that tool scam means. However, if you're not, I wasn't sure if what I thought Scott was talking about was what he was talking about. So I asked him, you know, so Scott, you know, tell me about this tool scam. We started talking about stuff, and I said, you know, it sounds like the Amway thing, because I was associated with Amway 3 separate times and lightly associated the first time, found there was really no focus on retail sales, meaning selling the products, and that's where you make your commissions, but there was a whole bunch focused on books, tapes, and functions. Got to go to every function. You hear all that BS stuff. Got to go to every function. The function that you miss is going to be have the golden key, and I'm like, you people are screwy. Like, where are you getting this stuff from? Anyway, so I just said, I wonder if Scott's thinking about or talking about the same thing that I was thinking about, and he was. When I asked him if he had a website, he said, I sure do. It's stoptheamwaytoolscam.wordpress.com. So after my third visit with Amway, and then after Scott, I said, look, you're right, Scott. There's a lot of people that don't know about this, and whether it could ever be done the right way or not, I'm not sure. I'm sure there are some people that might sell the products to retail customers, but the majority of them in those powerful systems are really hurting a lot of people because they're not disclosing that they're making money more on the tools than they are on the Amway business. And I didn't know the ratios, but I knew it was up at the top. It was a lot. So we've been doing this radio show for many, many years. It started in August of the year that Herbalife and Vima was shut. Well, Vima was shut down temporarily. Herbalife was being pushed by Bill Ackman, and I'm guessing that might have been around, I don't know, 2015, maybe even before. So we've been here for a while. Having said that, if you go to Scott's website, he's going to give you his website in a second. You'll be able to find more stuff. If you go back to buildingfortunesradio.com/Scott-Johnson, you'll be able to hear the previous radio shows. And for all those people that might be inside scoop type people, this is a special anniversary, and I'm not going to give the dignity to the reason why it is a special anniversary, but I remember, and I am so glad because we have helped to bury someone that deserves to be buried, somebody who's just always stupid, and it is the anniversary of that first phone call that started it all. So if you have listened to us at all, you'll see that Easter, and for all those people who celebrate Passover, Easter, happy holidays, this is a special holiday for us as well. So if you know who I'm talking about and you go look under his name, you'll see that he's pretty much been decimated, actually fled fled the continent and is having a wonderful time in his own demise. So we're just kind of like having some fun. And I'm going to step away from that conversation, Scott, because I'll reveal who it might be pretty soon. So, Scott Johnson, thanks for being here on your own radio show.
Hey, Peter. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I think it was, I believe it was 3 years ago on Easter weekend.
It was.
This occurred. In fact, he called you at 1 a.m. on Easter morning. And I won't go into the details either because we have a great guest and I don't want to take up her time. But you're right. And let me go ahead and give my my Facebook page, because on my Facebook there's links to three websites. There's links to my YouTube channel. There's a link to a video on Rumble, which is really significant, particularly this evening. And I'll go ahead and describe that video real quick for people. I just encourage you to go watch it. It's a guy by the name of Joe Markowitz, who is very high level in an Amway tool scam company called LTD, Leadership Team Development, I believe is what it stands for. And he gave about a 9-minute video explaining that the first year in LTD is now going to be free. The tools are going to be free. Now you still have to pay for transportation and, you know, your hotel, your meals, and so forth, particularly for the major functions, which might be across the country, but your ticket to get in is free, and the audio recordings are going to be free. Now, they're not going to be supplying any books. They're also not going to allow you for that first year to buy any additional things, whether it be, you know, additional audio recordings or books from them. I mean, you can always buy books from somewhere else. And those kinds of things. Even they even have a clothing line that is also sold by the upline within LTD. They're not allowed to buy that for the first year. So I think they were trying to make sure that it was going to be completely free and there was not going to be any backdoor going on. But what really tickled me was Joe Markowitz twice in this video talks about how, and this is his word, the sole reason, he used the word the sole reason that we have tools is to help, you know, the new IBO be successful on an ongoing basis. Now, it's a fact that these people are making multiple times more from the tools, which you referred to, Peter, as books, tapes, and functions. That's, in our day, that was what we were using. Nowadays, there's, of course, more modern technology, so there's, you know, MP3, MP4 downloads, there's phone apps, there's voicemail, there's website access, in addition to the books and the various size and numbers of meetings. All of these things are extremely lucrative, and my websites have examples that I found over the years of people who got kicked out, and then they just started talking. And my favorite one is Brig Hart, and his name is Brighart. He was a big double diamond back in the 90s and early 2000s. He gets kicked out for getting crossways somehow with his upline. I don't know. Maybe our guest knows some about that. But anyway, he did an interview for a Salt Lake City media outlet, and he said, yeah, I was making almost $1 million a year from Amway, and I was making $8 to $10 million a year from the tools. And he was trying to make the point that his new MLM, which happened to have been Mona V, which has since been bought out by another MLM, paid out so much better. You know, their pay plan was so much better that he didn't have to, and these are my words, he didn't have to scam his downline with the tools. And so that's the point he was trying to make. But in making that point, he talked about how much money he was making from the tools when he was in Amway. And there's several other examples of similar magnitude as far as the tools, anywhere from 2 times to 4 to 5 times. You know, it's all in that area. Even if it's only twice as much, right, from tools compared to Amway, that's 2/3. And it only goes up from there. And what makes it a scam isn't that they're making the money. I don't have any problem people making money. It's the fact that they let on that their financial wealth came from Amway. And in reality, most of it came from the tools. And that's what makes it a scam, is they just don't talk about, at least while they're in, they talk about it after they get kicked out, but while they're in, they don't talk about that. It's not even a subject. And so to me, that's lying by omission, right? You can lie two different ways. You can lie by commission, which is where you commit a lie, you say something is false, or you can lie by omission, where you leave out something that probably should have been told in order to give the person a complete picture of what's going on, but you don't. You leave it out. And that's the Amway tool scam in a nutshell. So that's problem number one with MLMs. And let me go ahead and give my Facebook page. So it's facebook.com/ScottTexJohnson. That's ScottTexJohnson, all one word. And that's where you'll find all these links. You'll find my phone number, my email, all those other things I talked about. You'll also find pinned to the top my response to the FTC's request back in May of 2022. Man, we're going on 2 years now, where they wanted input on product claims and income claims. And it was a multi-question request. It had a bunch of questions, a bunch of sub-questions. And I haven't read all 1,600 or so of the responses, but I believe I'm the only one that addressed point by point by point, by sub-point, by sub-point, by sub-point, every single question that the FTC raised. And you can find that, again, at the very top of my Facebook page. So, you know, number one problem is the tool scam. And not all MLMs have tool scams. Amway's, in my understanding, is the most lucrative. There might be one out there that's more, but I'm not aware of it. And I see that as RICO fraud. It's at least business fraud, because if you're saying, hey, I want you to get in business with me, but you don't describe the business model, to me that's business fraud. It's pretty obvious to me. I'm not a lawyer, but it's really kind of confusing why the FTC hasn't picked up on that. So we'll see what happens going forward. So the second problem, and I think this is either universal or nearly universal, which is the lack of retail sales. And when we say retail sales, we're talking about selling the products or services, you know, depending on the MLM, to people who are not part of the compensation plan. They're customers. They're not in it for any other reason than to exchange the money for the product or service. Just like if you go to a store, you're a customer. And the issue with that, there's a couple of issues. Number one, there's no federal law that defines the minimum. I think that's something the FTC should take care of. But also, the issue here is, the question would be, why do you have to have retail sales? And to me, the reason is because you have to be able to show that there's free market demand for the products. Otherwise, let's say you have a $200 product in an MLM, a very similar product in the marketplace might be $100, you know, half the cost. And so if you can't show that your product is good enough to pay twice as much for to a customer, not to a distributor, because the distributors are being told, this is my one-line description of an MLM, the ones that are not doing it right, is if you work hard enough and long enough, you'll get filthy rich. Well, there's a big carrot there for a distributor to buy the overpriced products, whereas there's not a big incentive for a customer because, again, they're just exchanging money for the product or service, and it's either worth it or it's not. And so that extra $100 that's being paid for that product is really the same thing as, you know, back in the old chain letter days or the airplane game or the gifting schemes of today. It's just exchanging money for no value. And you've got a product mixed in there that makes it a little bit more hard to understand and decipher. But to me, the line has kind of been drawn. You mentioned earlier, Peter, the VEMA and Herbalife settlements of 2016. And we did get started in 2015, like you said. It was actually on Labor Day after I had listened to your show. I think it was a weekend show, and I called you right on that Labor Day Monday. And, you know, you weren't busy because, you know, people you generally don't do business on Labor Day. And so we had a nice conversation. It was great. But when Veeam and Herbalife did settle with the FTC in 2016, both of them, and again, remember, a settlement, they didn't go to trial, but a settlement is where both sides agree that this is a fair compromise. So Veeam agreed and the FTC agreed that 51% of the products need to be sold to customers. Herbalife, it's a little bit more complicated. There's a sliding scale. It goes from like one-third to two-thirds, but the middle of that is 50%. And so, I draw the line at 50% because, there's no law. But if you can sell as much as you use on a household-by-household basis, that to me you have demonstrated free market demand, and therefore you are a legitimate MLM. Now, I know that Amway, when Warren Woodward sued them in 2007, right in his lawsuit, he said, yeah, you guys did a third-party study, and that company told you that you had 3.4% retail sales. Well, that's not very close to 50. It's pretty close to zero. And that includes, by the way, the people like me who were taught explicitly how to cheat, how to make a personal consumption look like a retail sale. And that, we know, is very common because we've had numerous guests on this show over the past over 8.5 years now on a weekly basis, and I try to ask them that question, and every single one of them has said, yeah, there's no way you could sell as much as you consume. There's just no possible way to do that. Now, I'm sure there's exceptions out there, but they're very rare. Now, when you don't have enough retail sales, that's the actual definition of an illegal pyramid. A lot of people don't understand that. A lot of people, in fact, Amway even had a short 2 or 3 minute video one time. I think they've taken it down, but I have a copy of it, where they said, you know, an illegal pyramid is where, you just give money and there's no products available. There's no products involved. And that is true. However, what Amway didn't say is you can also have products and still have an illegal pyramid. And so they're very tricky in putting across the message indirectly. You know, they imply that as long as you have products involved, you don't have an illegal pyramid. And just ask Veeam or Herbalife about that, and they'll tell you that that's not true. And other MLMs too. There's been other MLMs over the years. Unfortunately, not enough, but they've been out there. So I'll stop there because we have a great guest. This is really a bombshell show because we've never had anyone – on this show, that used to be in Amway. I'm just going to say we're going to call her Dee, and she was at the Jewel level. So people that know Amway's levels know where the Jewels start, and they can just discern for themselves what level Dee was at. So she comes from a very strong position of knowing the inside stuff that was going on in Amway. And Dee, I just wanted to welcome you to the show. Thanks for being here. I guess what I'd like to do is just, ask you to tell your story. You know, how were you approached originally? What were you doing at the time? What was the approach like? How did you get started? If you can just kind of give us that very, very beginning, and then we can get into a bunch of other stuff. I just wanted people to know, how you got involved in Amway years ago. Go ahead and, again, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here, and I enjoyed hearing what you put out there to begin the show with because I think you're absolutely right on target with the whole tools issue and then also the retail issue. But before we start talking about that, just a little bit about how I got involved. My fiance at the time was at his workplace, and he got approached by someone who had just come into where he was working, and it was a very low-key approach, just, kind of a rapport building, just few minutes, but then later he got a call, and of course this person wanted to show him a way that he could use his skills at talking to people to be able to be wealthy, and you know, did he want to do the rest of his life? And at that point, that was a very shiny object to hang in front of someone who was just fresh out of college and working, you know, first job trying to get ahead. Again, he was my fiance, and I really was happy with what I was doing. I was fresh out of college as well, but I knew that he wasn't. And so when he told me that he had been approached and this guy wanted to talk to us, that he also said that he didn't want to just talk to him. Since we were engaged and going to be married, it was vital that I show up too. And, of course, at that time, we met with he and his wife, and they showed us the plan for, like, 2 hours. And, you know, at the end, left some materials with us. And at the end, my fiancé said, well, if you don't see anything illegal with it, I'm doing it. And, you know, here, you look at the numbers because you're the numbers person. And if something doesn't work, tell me, but otherwise I'm doing it. So that's how I got involved. You know, in the beginning, when I started going to meetings by request of my fiancé, because I didn't realize that he was getting a lot of pressure for me to be there with him, I started seeing what I thought was a really good, you know, group of people, family-oriented, it seemed, you know, moral. It made a lot of faith was put into the meetings at that time. And so I felt like, well, maybe this is a good business. Maybe this is a good place for us to build our roots. And during that time, we got married about 6 months after that. And that's how we got involved. I remember you're talking about the retail thing. Now, this was years ago, okay? This was in the mid-'80s. 1980, and when I remember getting our sales kit, and when we got our sales kit, our sponsor helped go through it and show us what was in there and all that, but we used to get these sheets that were, like, there were 10 of them, and they were where you were supposed to report your retail sales and supposedly turn them into the company at some point. Well, our sponsor just ripped those in half and threw them in the trash and said, we don't really worry about this. And it was made very clear from the very beginning that this was more about you buy from yourself and you show others how to buy from themselves. It wasn't about retail sales.
Yeah, and I just have to, if I can interject, I was under, you know, Dexter Yeager and Don Wilson, and we had a very much repeated phrase, buy from yourself and teach others to do the same. It fits right along with what you're saying. That's exactly what I heard many times from stage was buy from yourself and teach others to do the same. Now, every once in a while, they would sort of mention retail sales, but they never said, hey, you got to do 50 PV a month or else you won't get your downline volume bonus. You know, we never got any notification from Amway, for example. Make sure you do your 50 PV. It's just ignored. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt, but go ahead.
No, I'm glad you did, because that backs up what I'm saying. Like, we were told, don't worry about this. And that changed slightly. Later on, I think the corporation got more concerned about, you know, not being labeled as a pyramid, so they started tracking it a little bit better. But it's very pushed under the rug. It was not presented to us as any kind of a requirement. I would have said immediately, you know, I'm not a salesperson. Now, my fiance at the time and later husband was. I was not, and so that would have not interested me at all. You know, it was made to be very nonchalant, like this is what they say, but we don't abide by it type attitude. So
yeah,
anyway,
and I think that's
how we got involved.
I think you're like most people. Most people are not interested in being salespersons, and so that's how you overcome that objection, is you just kind of take it off the table. So I'm sure you also duplicated your upline and ripped up that piece of paper. I don't even remember seeing that piece of paper.
Right? Yeah. Do you remember?
I don't remember that piece of paper. Now, we joined in 93. So, and to your point, we were in for 12 years before I found out about the tool scam. And then we were in for another 4 years after I was trying to design a legitimate Amway business. I got no cooperation from the company. And therefore eventually, you know, I just acted up and, you know, basically requested them to terminate me, and they did. And I was happy. But when you're in for that long, you know, 16 years, you see these cycles occur. You know, they're multi-year cycles. So, you know, let's say year two, you see there's a little bit more emphasis on retail sales temporarily. But then years three, four, and five, it kind of dwindled. And then maybe year six or seven, you'll hear a little bit more about it. But again, then it dwindles. And so that's what I noticed, was there was these long-term multi-year cycles of different things sort of being emphasized a little bit more, but it was never consistent. It was never put across in a very clear manner. It was all just temporary.
In my experience, those cycles were directly related to who was trying to qualify at what PIN level.
Interesting. Yeah.
Because we had a high upline diamond that needed some legs to qualify, all of a sudden retail sales becomes very important.
Right. Yeah. Well, it got to 3.4%, at least in 2007 timeframe. I don't know when the study was done, probably 2005 or six. And of course that's across the whole company, I believe in the United States, not worldwide. So, you know, it varies from one organization to another. Right. I mean, did you ever personally do the 50 PV per month? Did you guys ever accomplish that?
Well, when we were qualifying for certain things that we needed sales. So that would happen. We would push the cookware or the air treatment system or whatever the product was that we could get a lot of PV for. And we could sell if we needed to, which, you know, would happen. I can't tell you how many products my mom bought, you know, to help us with different levels that we were trying to achieve. So, yeah, there were times that I did the 50. I will say, though, when they started putting in the whole they started putting in this program where if you met certain criteria, you were considered to be a core player or a team player. And part of that criteria was doing about 300 points, which corresponds to between $500 and $800, depending on how you're spending the money and what kind of PV ratio you're getting. So,
yeah, in fact, in today's dollars, it's 300 PV is about $900 to $1,000, just so you know. Because when we were in, it was about
a bit.
When we were in, it was about a 2-to-1, and it got to be 2.5. Now it's 3 to 3.5. It's just inflation. That's all it is.
Right. So that's really difficult for families to do without retailing on some level. Do I think that they do half of it in retail? No way. It would be more like, you know, they're hoping to do a quarter of it maybe in retail, or 10% even, just to take some of the pressure off. But I did do a lot with the makeup line. I did a lot of helping downline to try to develop makeup customers, because that was a product where we could compete, I felt, financially with other good lines on the market. So we did do a lot of retail sales there, but by a lot, I would say, you know, across our whole group, maybe at some point we would do 10% if we were really pushing a lot of that kind of retail sales and doing a lot of work helping downline with it.
Gotcha. So you were bringing that 3.4% average up.
I would say so, at least on some months.
Right. Interesting. Now, we've talked in the past on the phone, and I know that from talking with you, which is very interesting, because each one of these tool companies, you know, they come up with their own policies on how much they pay out to different levels. And my understanding was always that you start getting paid at the platinum level, and maybe it's a quarter or a third of what you're making from Amway. But then when you get to Emerald, you get to make multiple times, maybe two or three times more from the tools compared to Amway. In fact, Orrin Woodward, you know, said on his blog after he got kicked out that his Emeralds and above made 4 to 5 times more from the tools compared to Amway. And so that's typically what I've heard, but you told me something a little bit different in LTV. If you can describe, you know, what the approach is there as far as when the big bucks kick in, because it's a little bit different than most organizations.
So I think that part of LTD's philosophy on tools and the cost on all that, part of that came from Brit Worldwide, which is part, you know, that's where it came from. But, yes, the bonuses started kicking in at Platinum, and they did change that to the profit sharing CSDD level later on, depending on how big your group was. Your upline always had the discretion of kicking you a little bonus earlier if they wanted to, and giving you, they called it giving you a break on the tools, meaning that you purchased them at a lower price and then sold them to your downline at a higher price, which was whatever the normal price was. But LTD's philosophy was that they didn't want to give the Platinums too much money, the Profit Sharings too much money. They didn't want to give the Emeralds too much money because they wanted them to be hungry for Diamond and to keep working for Diamond. And they felt like if the Emeralds made too much money, especially from the tools, that they would get content and not do that. So LTD system is heavily weighted towards Diamond and above as far as the amount of money that gets put out for tools.
Yeah, and then just assuming that it's a similar amount of money coming in, which I think is a reasonable assumption, that means that it's probably a lot more lucrative for the Diamonds and above in LTD because they're not sharing it with all of the Emeralds, because the Emeralds are not making multiple times, right? They're making,
right.
Would you say the Emeralds make at least as much from the tools as Amway, or a little bit less or a little bit more?
I would say it's probably around a little bit less to the same to a little bit more for Emeralds. And, you know, that was by design, at least when I was a part of LTD, that was by design. And then everything was weighted towards the Diamonds so the Diamonds could have the lifestyle to show. And, you know, that also was a controversial thing with Amway, though, because Amway did not like them showing anything but Amway money. But their whole lifestyle was really not from Amway money. It was from tool money, from Diamond and above. So there was some controversy there with how things were pictured. For instance, you know, I know that for some of the stories that they put in the magazine for Amway, they were very careful not to show too much in the way of income so that it wouldn't look like they were making more than what the plan showed.
Yeah, and did LTD have a book, a binded book called Profiles of Success? Like, I know Jaeger, and I'm pretty sure Britt had one like that.
They didn't, but they had stuff up on their website.
Gotcha.
So
gotcha.
That was more, they didn't have a book, but they had access to different websites where you could show that.
And they would show all their goodies,
and
their mansions.
And they also, LTD also had a video team that would go out and video that kind of stuff, and then they would show the videos at conferences and things. And so that was part of where they presented that kind of stuff too. But I understand they got in some trouble for that. So, and I don't know how things are now. It's been quite a while since I've been around, but that was something that they had to descend, and that was one of the things that was a big argument, I understand, with the company was, you know, if we just show Amway money, nobody's going to be motivated by that.
Right, exactly. In fact, I think there's a lot of pins. I mean, I was one of them. The only pin I ever got was the 1,000 pin, and that was for 1 month. We called it our vacuum cleaner month. we bought a vacuum, and one of our downline bought a vacuum, and plus the other products, it got us over 1,000 PV, but only for 1 month. But we kept wearing the pin. But I think that's very common where somebody achieves a pin legitimately one time, and then they go backwards. I know my upline diamond, Bruce Anderson, who I kicked out, told me on the phone personally, because I asked him. He says, oh, yeah, I was only a diamond for a year or two, and then I fell back to emerald, but I was making at least twice as much from the tools compared to Amway, and so I could keep the diamond lifestyle because all that additional money was coming in. Otherwise, he would probably have to go back and fly helicopters again like he was doing before, you know, he quote-unquote retired into Amway. So I think that's very common, especially when you consider the founder's pin, you know, which is where you essentially qualify 12 out of 12 months versus 6 out of 12 months. So like a diamond is 6 out of 12 months at a certain level, you know, six legs of 7,500 PV, getting into the weeds here a little bit. But if you do it for 12 months, and there's actually the new rules allow you to do it for 10 or 11 months as long as your volume is like something like twice as much as the minimum or something. It's pretty complicated. But anyway, you know, the point is there's very few founders that I'm aware of, and maybe you can give us a little bit of an insight in LTD. And if there's not founders pins, that means that wherever you're at, platinum, diamond, emerald, whatever your level is, if you're not a founders of that pin within a year or two, chances are you went backwards. That's my conclusion. You know, it's not based on any data or anything other than logically, you know, it just happens. Businesses fall apart, at least partially, and then, you know, you're at that lower pin, even though you're wearing the higher pin. What was it like in LTD? Were there a lot of founders' pins, or was that uncommon, like my understanding is, with other lines of sponsorship?
Well, there was a big push by Amway to create solid businesses, and that's when they put in the different founders' bonuses and the achievers' trip, which was, you know, platinum for 12 months, or, like you said, meeting the criteria that they set. So I think that was a good move, actually, on Amway's part to encourage, you know, solid businesses. But in LTD, you might have had the pin and you might be able to wear it, but if you fall out of qualification for a pin, you don't keep the tool money necessarily. So
that created
a lot of people fudging, getting ways around the system, figuring out how to qualify just to keep the tool money. And, you know, at certain levels, when you're making a lot of tool money, it pays you to buy over and buy the different things that need to happen to make your business look like you're still at that pin so you can keep that money.
Yeah, even though you're not, right? You just fudge it. And
right.
Yeah. We also talked about the accreditation program and how that was supposed to fix things too, you know, because before the accreditation program, it was kind of like, you know, the good old boys network. You know, if you're on the good side of the upline, you got some extra pool money. If you were on his bad side, then maybe not so much. It was a very much
carrot stick. They still have the ability to do that. Yeah, they still have the ability to do that because in the – well, okay, when I was involved, which, again, has been several years ago, in the agreement for the tools, when you start making money, it says you can have your tool money revoked if you stop being a blessing to your upline. Now, what that means is kind of at the discretion of the team and of the upline. So
yeah, that's a very subjective term.
The upline can throw you some extra money, or they can, play by the rules and take all your money away if they want to.
And so those words were approved by Amway then, huh? If you were a blessing to your upline?
Well, I don't know. I don't know how much Amway Legal got involved in all that. Because, according to Amway, the tool system is kind of separate. So even though it's part of building the business, they have tried to make it a non-part as far as they're concerned. Like the big pens run their tool systems and Amway supplies the products and the two are separate. But in my opinion, that is the reason why a lot of groups split up, because people become they see the money, they see all that's coming in, and they get frustrated because it's not being shared equally or appropriately or how they think it should be shared because of their team. And so they end up wanting to go away and do their own thing or find a different system that's going to pay them better.
Yeah, I think that's kind of how Larry Winters, who started LTD, he used to be under Britt, whether he wasn't making enough money or maybe he said, hey, Britt's making a lot of money because he owns the tool system, even though he's being fair with me. If I own the system, I can make even more money. So there's both of those factors, I think, where if you own the system, you're going to make more money. And if you think you're not being treated fairly, that's just another compounding factor to go ahead and start your own tool system. And that happened over the years. I mean, Wilson separated from Jaeger, kind of. He kind of separated, but he was still tied into a certain point. I think they had some kind of an agreement on keeping the Jaeger, like the audio recordings coming into the Wilson system. And, there was some payment there back and forth.
LTD did that with BWW for quite some time until they completely broke away.
Yep. Very similar. But, I mean, accreditation was supposed to fix the good old boy network. From what you said, it didn't.
Based on what I saw, the accreditation program, all it really did was kind of hamstring what people could say, like what they could put out on tapes and how they could represent the business in videos and that kind of thing. But I didn't see that it made much difference at all as far as the tools. There was one thing that I can say it changed, and that was that they had to say when they presented the plan that some money was made on the system.
Right. And that's actually in the Amway rules.
Right. But other than that, there's no breakdown of who makes what. There's no details given on how money is made on anything. And there's a lot of things that are kind of misleading that were said from stage that I heard. For instance, things about the conventions, the big conferences. Well, we run these as cheaply as we can. We don't make money on them. I've heard people say that, and later on, I'm like, they make a lot of money on those.
Yeah, we talked about that too.
Lie.
Can you explain, particularly for the major functions, how the upline makes money from the major functions?
Lots of different ways. So typically, if it's a big enough function, the upline sets that up with the city. The city has a chamber of commerce or a group that brings in conferences and that kind of thing, and they set it up through that so that the the convention place where they're holding the meetings is typically, there's typically no charge for that. So they get, or it's very little because they're bringing all this money into the city. And then you've got hotels where each room can provide a kickback to the person that's holding the conference. There's concession sales. There's, you know, different things like that where there's money coming in above and beyond the ticket sales.
Right. Yeah. And we talked about that on the phone earlier. And that's something I've heard over the years, but never definitively from somebody that was in your position that, that can say that with authority to say, yes, all these things were, you know, money makers. And I know that question came up before in the Wilson context, and the answer was, well, you know, some years we make some money, some years we lose money, you know, it washes out over the long haul. And now we know, of course, that that was a lie, that they make money hand over fist.
I've not known, especially emeralds and diamonds, I've not known them to do things to make, to lose money. You know, at least they're going to make something. Even if,
right.
even if the, the, you know, the weekly meetings, I mean, those were big money makers sometimes. I mean, if you brought in a really big pen and you charge at the end, when I was involved, it was $20 to come to an attitude session. And you have a couple thousand people at an attitude session and you've paid $800 to rent the room, there's a lot of money left over.
Right. Yeah. Do the math. It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Now, when you guys, we can call them open meetings.
And I will say it was all cash and it was easy to pass off.
Yeah. It was easy to not report to the IRS, right?
Well, that would be an assumption.
Yep. Yeah. It's funny because
I would say so, that that would be a possible thing that could happen.
Certainly. Yeah, I was talking to a guy who happened to be a minister, and he was in, I don't know, did you ever know Andy Andrews, come across him?
Not that I recall.
Okay, well, Andy was actually a diamond, and he was part of a group called TIFF, Team in Focus, not to be confused with Team and Orrin Woodward. It's a completely different group.
Mm-hmm.
But this minister was telling me, because he was in Andy's downline, Andy Andrews, and he said, yeah, there was one time where I got on his boat, and in every little cubby hole in the boat, there was just cash stuffed in every drawer, every, you know, little place to store anything. it was just overflowing with cash. You know, probably from the open meetings. Did you guys charge about $5 per person when you did the open meetings? That's where they show the plan. That's what we call it, open meeting.
Yeah, that's what we called it. It started off at $5, but then it went up. I think at the end, it was, when I was involved, it was more like 10. And we had to send a percentage of that to LTD. And then the rest was kept locally, and depending on the pen level, it could have been given to the speaker or put in a meeting fund for next time that things were needed. So, yeah, that's about right.
Yep, yep. And Peter, did you have any questions or comments for Dee?
No, we're good. I'm following and tracking this all along. So I'm totally okay. No questions.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, this this is a tremendous thing because, you know, we've never had someone that was at your level on the show before. But what you're saying is entirely consistent with all the other input. Plus, you're able to substantiate some of these things that I have heard over the years, but I never heard it from somebody in the know. You know, there's somebody that maybe overheard somebody else, and now we're getting it, as they say, from the horse's mouth. It's just really good to hear that. Now, you said early in the show how things were really nice and everyone was friendly and, you know, very, you know, respectful, and religion was emphasized and morals and ethics and all these kinds of things. But can you tell us a little bit more as you progressed in the business, you know, bigger and bigger pins, what happened as far as the pressure and particularly the pressure on the husband-wife relationship?
Sure, because I think that's something that people need to kind of be aware of. There's a lot of talking about how, at least there was, about how God's first, family second, and then whatever you put third is you know, going to be your moneymaker, and it should be the business. But then there was also talk about how if you love God and you want to serve your family, the best way to do that is build your business. So that was a roundabout way of saying that nothing really comes in front of the business as far as we're concerned, because if you're doing all of that, then you're doing the first two and you can feel good about yourself. So there's a lot of pressure. Go ahead.
No, we heard the same thing on the Jaeger side. Yeah, it was the same thing. First comes God, then family, and then Amway. But you need to put everything into Amway so that you can have all the God and family stuff. So, yeah, it really is duplicitous.
There's really not a whole lot of concern for family except, you know, financially they want to emphasize that if you build your business, you can take care of your family. But there's not a whole lot of showing you how to create income for your family. It's just build your business and the income will come. But like you said, there's the retail part of it is not really taught, I don't think, like it should be. And is it really a lucrative business to retail? Do the products stand up in the marketplace? Are they competitively priced so that retail is a, or are they unique enough so that people will pay for them? But anyway, that's, as far as pressure on, you know, family and a marriage, that's a lot of it, is the fact that if you're not building your business, you're made to feel like you're failing in all those other areas. And then there's a yardstick put in front of you all of a sudden where you have to meet certain standards. And if you're not meeting those standards, then you're just a complete failure. So how does that look when you've got, you know, a guy who is supposed to be doing certain things and he's not, and the wife knows it, and he's not building their business like she thinks he should, because he thinks that the family's, you know, going to be okay without that, or he's not motivated, whatever the reason is. All of a sudden, she's thinking that he's not serving his family, he's not serving God because he's not building the business. So there's a lot of things in there that psychologically will play with your mind and create a lot of pressure in a relationship. And then on the other hand, there's a lot of pressure on a wife, because at least when I was involved, there was a lot of talk about how, well, if you don't support your husband, then he needs to find a new wife. And the support was all in, it was all the yardstick of, what are you doing to build a business? What do you do to help them? So it sets up a lot of pressure. It sets up a lot of challenge and a lot of arguments. And then you also have an upline who is supposed to be counseling you on your finances and your business and your relationship and everything else. A lot of times that upline is not much further along than you are, and they're supposed to be the expert. And are they really giving you advice that's good for you? I think in most cases the upline is giving you advice that's good for them and what they want to do with their business. So it's not like an independent third party coming in like a counselor and giving you advice. It's somebody who's got something to win or lose with what they tell you.
Yeah, and with you at your level, you had all that different, you know, downlines, different people, different individuals that you were expected to apply that pressure on, because you were being counseled by your upline on how to handle people, and so you try to implement their advice with your downline, which puts even more pressure on you because it's not just you now. It's you
right.
plus a whole bunch of other people that you're, you know, trying to counsel. And I'm sure at the time you thought you were counseling them appropriately, you know, because your upline was painted as, you know, the expert and you know, supremely wealthy and knowledgeable and all these other good things. And so it just made sense to do that duplication and
right.
to implement the same things to your downline that they were telling you to do within your own life. So that
right.
just put extra pressure on you.
Yep, and I think, too, that even though you get blinded in the business, there's a lot of, I don't know if it's brainwashing or if it's just propaganda that you hear over and over and over again, but you really do start believing those things. And it's only when you really step away and start analyzing stuff that you're like, no, that's totally wrong. But in the business, there's so many people telling you the same thing over and over again over time that you really start believing those things. And then when you're working with other people, you really do believe what you're telling them. And that's how it comes across. It comes across as sincere and you believe it because you do. And that's, I think, where the danger is, especially with, you know, the whole brainwashing cult type thing. And I don't know if I'm supposed to say that or not, but the more I'm away from it, the more I see the cult-like properties of it and how mistaken and misled my thoughts were at that time.
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely encouraged to, you know, basically unplug yourself from outside sources of information, whether it be, you know, the TV, the newspapers, the internet, you know, your friends, your family. Everything gets focused on listening to your upline with the exclusion of everything else. And so it's
Absolutely.
Quite natural to, you know, kind of fall into that trap. I mean, you know, we did it too. We were true believers for a dozen years. Thinking if this really was a legitimate business, only to find
yep.
out the lack of retail makes it an illegal pyramid and the pool scam makes it repo fraud. You know, once I realized that, I realized, and I call this an evil genius, I realized that they were getting others to tell lies, but the people that were telling the lies, the downline, thought they were telling the truth. And so they came across as very forthright, very, very honest, very, you know, confident in their advice. And only the very top layer knew the real story. Right. And everyone else was basically a pawn in their hands. And it's again, it's an evil genius, because what better way of spreading a lie but by people who don't even know it's a lie. You know, you don't
right.
even have
and
to be a good liar. All
right.
you have to do is, you know, duplicate, basically.
And I will say, too, that at the bigger pen level, they, too, are kind of brainwashed. I mean, when you look at the amount of money that they make, you know, in their minds, they think they deserve all that because they're, you know, Bill Britt has said it before, your income is a measure of how much you've helped people. And so in their minds, when they're making all this money, they're thinking, well, they're just helping a lot of people. And then, you know, the whole thing about, well, Amway, nobody would build Amway if they only made Amway money, which you've heard before. And I know that was a big thing, you know, that came out with the corporation years ago. You know, people, big distributors were telling the company, hey, nobody would do this for what you pay. That's why we have a tool system. So that's part of it, too, is that people start thinking, you know, I'm worth more than what Amway would pay me, so this is just my dues. You know, this is because I'm going out there and helping people, which really means just spreading the propaganda. Then I deserve all this money. I deserve this lifestyle.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, Amway is definitely in on this. Rich DeVos made some recordings, at least two, back in the early 80s called Directly Speaking. I don't know if you ever listened to those. But he basically said, you know, my lawyers, this is Rich DeVos speaking, my lawyers say if you're making more than 10% from tools compared to Amway, we could get in some real trouble with the government. But I'm such a nice guy. Again, this is my words, you know, speaking as Rich DeVos. I'm such a nice guy that I'll make it 20%. Well, these people are making 200, 500, and 1,000% plus more from the tools than they are from Amway. And Rich DeVos even basically threatened to say, you know, if you guys don't straighten it out, we're going to take some serious action. Well, it never occurred. And to this day, they're still making all that money. And to go back to the accreditation, I agree with you. The accreditation never addressed anything about the profit. And it was just to clean up some of the claims that were being made. But it was also, because I've talked to Amway about this, it was supposed to level the playing field to get away from the good old boy arrangement. But if Amway allowed LTD to put in language like you have to be a blessing to your upline, such a subjective, you know, criteria, then that's really going all the way back to the good old boy network. I will say
it's been many years since I saw that agreement, and it's probably completely changed now. You know, I don't know what kind of lawyers have had hold of it since then, but there is something that you, at least that I know of, that you have to sign that recognizes that you have to fulfill your obligations as part of the team to be entitled to get any income. And that includes, you know, following along with what you're told, basically. You know, Emily, when they came in with the accreditation, it was more about that you had to have a certain percentage of your your videos and your audio recordings had to be reviewed by Amway lawyers. It was more about Amway not getting sued over stuff than it was the tool system and the money for it.
Right. Yeah, oh, exactly. And I even asked Amway, and I think I've asked the Platinum this in the past, where, you know, I've asked them, well, you know, did you have a contract? They were supposed to. And they said, yeah, we had a contract, but we weren't allowed to see it. I'll put it this way. They were allowed to see it, but they weren't allowed to have a copy of it. And so, you know, it was that nebulous. And Amway told me at one point, and again, this was years ago as well, but I believe this is still the policy, is that if you're a Platinum, you get to see the Platinum agreement. And again, these are agreements within your tool company system, not with Amway. You know, Amway approves the accreditation of these agreements, but they don't own the agreement. But if you're a Platinum, you're not even allowed to see the Emerald agreement until you become an Emerald.
And nobody talks about what the different bonuses are or anything like that until you're at that level, and then you get let in on the secret.
Right. Yep. And that's a perfect word, it's a secret. Now the internet has helped, you know, because the word is out there. People have to find it, of course. They have to want to find it. But the information is out there to see that they are making multiple times more from the tools compared to Amway, and much to Joe Markowitz's chagrin, I'm sure, making that video where he said the sole reason that we have tools is to help that new IBO, you know, build a successful and long-term business. And yet he's cleaning up, making I don't know how many more times, but it's multiple times more, I'm sure, from the tools compared to Amway. And how he can say that with a straight face, I mean, you almost have to be psychotic in my mind, you know, to put yourself on video like that and put it out there. And again, like I mentioned earlier, you can see that video. You can see Joe Markowitz's lips moving and hear him say that twice in the 9-minute video. It's quite incredible. You know, it's just as good as Andy Andrews with his declaration in a major function that they made multiple times more from the tools compared to Amway. That video is on my YouTube channel too. So yeah, there's a lot of information out there, and the internet has helped, but it hasn't helped enough, in my opinion, because it's still out there. You know, as far as the Amway
business, and it's talked about sometimes, but not in a way where people really find out any information if they're part of the group. Like, people would ask, you know, well, do they make money on the tools? And they were told, yeah, but it helps them to serve their organization better. That was what we were always told to say, is, you know, any money that's in the tool system helps the leaders to serve their organizations better.
Right. Yeah, it's never quantified, and that's the important thing in my mind.
No.
Is because if you look at the Amway rules, and it's been in there for a really long time, I don't know how far back it goes, but it goes back as far as I know, that some money is made from the tools by some people. Well,
right.
That's all fine and dandy, but the question is, who is it and how much?
Right.
And Rich DeVos even said that in his Directly Speaking recording. He said, you know, if you're making more from tools than you are from Amway, you're really in the tool business. You know, you're in the Amway business too, but your primary business is the tool business.
Right.
And that shouldn't be the way it is, but it still is, you know, and we're talking
years ago. So one of the things that I remember about going through the accreditation, because that was, you know, new, when I was there, one of the things that they started doing was requiring us to do some kind of product education at the convention. So that was another thing that got added. And the funny part about that is that was always like the kickoff at 8:30 in the morning on Saturday morning when nobody was in the Coliseum, because they had been up till 4 in the morning at a night out. So,
right.
You know, it was there, and they did what they had to do, but not to the extent that I think Amway wanted. And I think that, you know, they all thought it was more important to motivate than it was to educate in most cases.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. I experienced the same thing, because Dexter used to come on stage at maybe 2 or 3 o'clock, you know, either Friday night, or, you know, Saturday morning, or Saturday night, Monday morning, or Sunday morning, you know, just really late at night and talk. And, you know, most people are just, you know, asleep, basically.
Right.
You can't
yeah.
even pay attention. That's funny how they timed that with the, you know, people being burned out from the night owl the previous night, and either not even being there physically or not being there mentally, even if they were there physically,
right.
to hear what was going on.
It gives you the idea of how much importance they put on retail sales and product sales and product knowledge in general.
Exactly. Yeah, they just check the box. That's all they did.
Mm-hmm.
They
yep.
They check the box and say, "Yep, we did that. Okay, let's move on. Let's not discuss if it was effective or anything, but let's just say we did it." And Amway could say, "We told them to do it," you know. So it's
right.
not us. You know, everyone's kind of
right.
like, "Not my fault."
Exactly.
Just passing the buck around. Yep. Yep. Well, Peter, was there anything that you've been thinking about as we've been going along here as far as comments or questions?
All good stuff. I remember when I was looking at the Amway tool scam and other things that happened in MLM, because I came from the outside and was somewhat unspoken and not put in the ether, you know, of the hypnotism of the way they brainwash and convince people, I basically would say, you know, when I was president of the ANMP or the DRA or anything else, I'm like, you people, like, you believe this stuff. I mean, what is wrong with you? Like, you are so
yeah.
full of your own poop. Like, it's crazy. Like, you buy your own BS. And it would be so easy just to do it the right way. You know, and the right way would be full disclosure. Tell people why you need a tools business tacked onto a crappy MLM compensation plan. And then make it available. This is how you get access to the tools. And believe it or not, the only person, and Dee, I don't know if you know this, but the only person I've ever seen do the Amway business model with tools the right way was Kevin Trudeau. And I told this story once before, but you know, or many times before on this radio show. Kevin Trudeau was out to beat Amway at their own game. And because he was connected to Nightingale Conant, which is the tape manufacturer way back then of the self-development guys, he basically convinced Nightingale Conant to handle distributor services, which is basically the tools business, for a network marketing company called Nutrition for Life. And Kevin from stage would say, the people on stage are making money on this function, the books that you buy, the business builder. We had a $29.99 business building pack that you had to buy if you were platinum or a certain pin level, if you wanted to be qualified. And these tools, basically, if you're really good at what you do and you have a good cassette in the program or you're doing the right things, you're going to make a ton of money in addition to whatever you're doing in your business. You had to earn the pin, but you had to make sure you're at a performance level. But everybody had the same opportunity. If you were a crappy speaker, get better. If you were a little guy who's never going to get big, then that's okay. We're here to help you. Like, where could you go? If you really suck at this, where could you go to plug into this level of expertise? And by the way, that was true. But the difference is with Kevin Trudeau and Nutrition for Life and Distributor Services, they spoke the truth from stage. The crazy part about Amway, it's kind of like, how come you people, it's almost like being able to see dead people, like that movies. You know, I see dead people. Like, I see the dead bodies here. Like, why can't you people realize what's going on? Like, oh, my God. Well, and then the,
Because they don't want people to know how much is there, how much money is there, because it's so much.
Exactly. And not only that, the crappy leadership advice that was given, like, oh, my God, like, where are you people coming from? Like, who believes this stuff? Like, I can't, you don't believe this stuff. Like, oh, my God, these people believe this stuff. So it was almost like when I was in Amway for the brief period of time witnessing the stuff that I witnessed, I'm like, you people are hypnotized. Like, oh, my God, you guys are like zombies. Like, oh, my God. And the other part of the problem is that really good, hardworking people were sucked in. So they got sucked in where they didn't, I think if they had a clear head and weren't under some level of hypnotism, and that's the only way I could really describe it, it's kind of like you're hypnotized. It's kind of like, you know, just something weird. Why do you people believe this? And then you preach it. And then you, like, I really think you believe, like, I really think you believe it. Like, that's really scary. Like, that's really scary. Like, I think you're sincere when you say things that you do. Like, the bad advice, like, oh, my God, you know, if they say, well, your spouse isn't supporting your business, so maybe you'd find a better spouse or a different spouse. Like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Right. They're giving marital advice. They know nothing about this relationship. This is so twisted. Like, these people are, and I'll use the playful word, these people are sick. Like, holy crap. But, like, so that's what I witnessed. So I just, for those people that never think, like, oh, I wouldn't fall for that, you'd be surprised. You get in, it's incremental.
It's so, and you're love bombed in the beginning, and you're made to feel like you're a part of something really special, and, you know, there's these people are your best friends, and they'll never let you down, and you know, then you get sucked away from your normal life. You know, we were taught not to listen to the radio, listen to tapes, and you know, don't watch TV at night. Read your books, and you're going to meetings. often as you can, and watching videos now probably. I mean, there's so many ways that they get in your head. And then they use religion. They use God a lot to let you know that you know, well, I remember hearing many times the statement that, well, if you stay on God through this business, then that means you're supposed to stay in this business and use it as your mission field. Like God can't have some other plan for you. You have to stay in the business and use it because that's how you got back to God. I mean, there's so many ways that they manipulate things into, like you said, you really do believe that you're in the best thing possible and you're out to save the world. That's how they make you feel, especially when you've been around for a while.
Yep, and it would be real if it was a real opportunity with where you could really get, but they hide the truth from stage, which is crazy. So my last question would be, and thanks for validating a lot of the things that some people might speculate themselves or just think about, but what was the turning point? So why, you know, Dee, did you finally say, that's it, I'm out, I'm done? And then I know the further you got away from it, the more clear you started thinking, but what was it that finally made you leave?
So I became very disillusioned as I saw bigger pins behind the stage doors. Some things that I heard and always believed, I did not see being lived out in a way that I could say, oh, that person really, you know, is what they say they are. So that's one thing. Another thing that happened was the beginning of tools going online and people being able to listen to audio recordings and get their tools online rather than having to get tapes or then CDs. There was a huge opportunity at that point for the leadership to drop pricing and make those tools more accessible because it's pennies to get stuff online that people can access. And instead of doing that, they chose to keep the profits in the system and even increase the profits and make them, you know, the whole talk was, how are we not going to lose money if we put tools online? How can we make more money? How can we, you know, push this so that people can't share things? They can't, you know, buy a recording and then share it out 400 times. There was so much talk about preserving money in the system when I had always believed that the costs were inherent in the system because they were necessary, at least part of it was. And that became hard to defend. And it also made me think that, you know, maybe these people are more about the profit than they are the people. And I always wanted to be about the people, and I just got tired of living the lie.
So if I would use the word greed, that would be a big thing. So you found there was greed
yes,
amongst the leadership?
Yes, there was a lot of inconsistencies. There was not a lot of concern for the downline. It was more about the pocketbook, the people that were in charge. And it just became it became a lie to me. It became all about money and greed. And, you know, you mentioned Joe and his talk about the tools and that the sole reason was for the good of the business. I really do believe that he believes that that's the main reason, but he's making a lot of money too. So, you know, that part of it he should also state is that there, you know, the tool system provides something for the downline. It does keep them connected. It does provide a way to get education out. But it's a big moneymaker. And like you said, that should be transparent.
Yeah, and that was actually part of, if you go again on my Facebook page and my YouTube channel that has a link there, that Andy Andrews video, he states very clearly, and he's in a major function, that Amway told him in writing that 98%, or I should say 2% or less should make money from the tools, and the other 98% should not even be aware that there's an opportunity to make money from tools. And so that is the official Amway position. That's as official as it gets. In any other environment, you would be proud to say, yes, we're making a ton of money from the tools. That's why it's such a great business. Look at this. Look at all this money we're making from the tools. But in Amway, it's the exact opposite from what Kevin Trudeau, who's not the most honest person, obviously, at least he was honest in that part of it,
right.
To say, yeah, we make a lot of money from the tools, but you won't find Amway saying that. And it's interesting that in the UK, there was a trial where the equivalent of the FTC in the UK was trying to kick Amway out of the country. Well, Amway obviously wanted no part of that, right? That would potentially be a domino effect amongst other countries. And one of the things that Amway agreed to, and they represented a couple of the tool companies that were over there, but they agreed that no profit would be made by the tools in the UK. Now, you can recover the cost of production, but you can't make a profit on it. And that was the agreement, amongst other things. You're also not, Amway's not allowed to charge any kind of a sign-up or renewal fee for their IBOs in the UK. Those are two of the things that, Amway was willing to bend over backwards to do anything that was being asked in order to not be kicked out of the country and have that potential domino effect occur.
That makes sense, but I wonder how many of the people that were bigger pens actually are still around after that. Like, that's a huge blow. Now, I don't know what their system money was like in the UK. I do know that they had big conferences over there because we had people that went there and were part of those conferences as guest speakers.
Was that after the 2000, let's say 2008 time frame?
It would have been right around that time frame. So
okay.
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe their regulations on conventions were different, but I know people that got paid to go there.
Yeah, and who knows if they're actually following the agreement, right? I mean, that's one of those things
Right.
If the government doesn't keep up with it, it could just get out of control again. I know when Herbalife – go ahead, Peter.
Oh, I do have another question. I was just thinking about something because we were talking about income. How did the income get reported that was paid to the people in the tools business? Did you guys sign up under a separate company and get a 1099 from the group? Or was it just like a check that was written?
Yes. For the things that went through the system like that, then we got a 1099. But for a lot of the meetings where people paid cash to get into the meeting, I mean, there's no telling how much money was there that just, it was never reported anyway.
Right, so the meeting holder or the person who was handling the function, let's call it, was responsible for that. But as far as if you were a speaker or if you were sold or if you were being compensated based on books or tapes or anything else like that, you got a 1099.
Well, and it depended on, who was running the meeting and how they were running it. And there's a lot of variables in there. But, yes, there was a 1099 for tools and speaking at the big conferences and that kind of thing.
Without disclosing something that's confidential, what type of money is given to a speaker? Is it hundreds, thousands, more? Do they handle expenses and food and hotels? Like, what's usually covered by a speaker?
Yeah. So if a speaker was coming in from out of town, and I can only speak to what my experience was. Typically, any kind of travel or hotel was covered through the meeting cost. And then a percentage, if it was an LTD meeting, a percentage was turned back into LTD, and then the rest of it would go to the speaker.
So for instance, if I was a speaker and I was going to go to Las Vegas for a convention or for a meeting, did the group pay for my hotel and my flight, or did I buy it and then I expensed them and then I got my money back in a 1099? Like, did they have their own travel agents that basically book people?
No. Typically, the speaker would book their own travel, and then when they got money back for the conference, they would take it out of there so that way they could deduct their travel as a business expense.
Mm-hmm.
But if they were going out of town, typically if they were speaking in a city, that the meeting in that city would cover the hotel and would book that for them.
Okay. So it was kind of like a hybrid situation, some money out of their pocket that they would be reimbursed, and sometimes, like for instance, if it's a hotel, they would just say, here's your room, you know, for the next night or two.
Correct. And like at a big conference, rooms were provided for a certain level of pin, whether they were speaking or not at the conference. A lot of times they would have their room taken care of. It just depended. But keep in mind, too, that a lot of the hotels were obligated to give a certain number of rooms for free based on occupancy of the rooms in the hotel. So, for instance, somebody might get a free room for every 20 rooms that were booked in the hotel. So they had rooms to provide the speakers that didn't cost them anything.
And I know I asked the question, I'm not sure if you answered it, only because I probably talked over you. The dollar amount that they would spend or give to a speaker for an event, like at a regional event, you know, was it a few hundred or a few thousand, or did it depend on the pull of the celebrity?
Yeah, it really depended on the speaker. If somebody was well-known and a really good speaker, they could pull hundreds into a meeting or even thousands. And if, you know, a person's not that great a speaker and they weren't that well-known, of course, the gate would not be very much. So it just depended on, it wasn't a set amount. It was based more upon the speaker. And then also certain cities are more expensive to hold meetings in as well. So you always have to consider, you know, did it cost anything to get the room for the meeting? How much was it? That kind of thing. Sometimes you could arrange with the hotels to get a discount if you purchase food. Sometimes people would do that. They would have like a dinner before the meeting. There was a lot of different things that went on to try to maximize the profits there and minimize expenses.
So in reality, I mean, if anybody was thinking about the tools portion of the business, it was a business. I mean, it is a business. This is run with the same level of sophistication. Yeah, the same level of sophistication as like a travel agent would run a function.
Yeah, I would say so. There was a lot of
fine-tuned machine.
Right. And there's a lot of analysis, you know, of what was going to work and in certain cities, you know, how often could you do meetings and turn a profit in them and that kind of thing. So that was all part. Like some speakers wouldn't go to certain cities because they wouldn't make any money. So that was also another thing, is if you were part of a city that had high expenses, you might not get good speakers because they didn't want to go because they weren't going to get paid much.
So much for building a downline. We're going to train you. Everybody's going to train your downline. So how much am I making from that event? Okay, maybe someone else will do it.
Well, but if it's your downline, that's a little different. You know, it's like you were getting paid in other ways, too.
Yep.
But if you were a guest speaker going in to speak for another organization, really your only reimbursement would be whatever you got paid for that meeting.
So I'm going to ask one other question. We're almost done. So we all know that human nature is such where people are going to cheat. What would happen if a rogue speaker would try to kind of cut a deal? I think like relative to the mob, you know, the mafia, Italian stuff, you know, where a guy decides that he's going to kind of pull up his own thing and maybe get a little bit of money on the side, you know, take a little bit off the top. What would happen with did that happen? I already probably know the answer, but the answer is what would happen next?
I don't know what would happen next, because if that happened, I never knew about it. You know, the whole business was based on having godly principles, and so the people that were running the meetings were, as far as I know, always above board. They didn't take any kind of fee or anything. Now, some of the larger meetings did pay the host a fee. It was minimal, $100, maybe $150, depending on the meeting. But, you know, that was never, I never knew anybody that got caught doing something like that, where they took money out of off the top of the meeting.
Well,
so I don't know. I don't know the answer to that one.
That's a good question. Okay, Scott, guess what? We're just about out of time. If not, we're done. But you can ask any other questions, and we'll wrap up this radio show.
Yeah, this has been terrific. And Dee, I just wanted to ask you as a last question, was there anything that you were thinking about before the show you wanted to cover that we didn't get to, or maybe something you thought of during the show that we just haven't talked about? Was there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, just one quick thing. You and I talked on the phone about how, you know, MLMs are legitimate businesses if they have legitimate products, and it's a good way for people to get, you know, their product into the marketplace if they don't have a lot of money for marketing and that kind of thing. So you and I have kind of the same attitude that we're not non-MLM. What we are is non-transparency. You know, we're against the transparency issues if they're not divulging all the information and they're not also teaching people how to make money and they're just taking money. That's a whole different story, too. So I'm glad that you covered that. I think you covered that well in the beginning, but I just wanted to kind of ram back to that.
Yeah, I appreciate you kind of closing the loop on that, because neither Peter or I are anti-MLM. We like to say, you know, we're pro-MLM when it's done right, and we're anti-MLM when it's done wrong, and we're willing to name what we mean by right and wrong. It's not just this, you know, ether right and wrong. It's actually tool scams and retail sales. Those are the two big ones. Not that those are the only two things, but to me, those are the two big things. And if you don't fix those two things and you fix everything else, whatever else is out there, you really won't accomplish very much. Whereas if you do fix things like tool scams and retail sales, you'll be fixing 95%+ of the issues. And even a non-MLM business, there's no business is perfect. And we're not looking for perfection. We're just saying, hey, these are the two big rocks that are in the way of Amway and a lot of other MLMs, particularly the retail sales. A lot of MLMs don't have tool scams, but almost all of them, to my knowledge, have a lack of retail sales. And so that's why we focus on those things, because, again, if you don't fix those things, but you fix everything else, you won't accomplish very much.
Yep,
and that's where I
come
down on it. But we just appreciate you being on the show, you know, being a high-level jewel-type person formerly in Amway to give us these insights and some of these things that I've heard over the years, but not from a, you know, a person of authority that really knows the inside stories and experienced them and knows exactly how things are done. And so I just really appreciate you being on the show. And you know, if there's an opportunity, if you think of other topics you'd like to discuss, you're certainly welcome to come back on the show and discuss those things, because, again, you have the credibility of being there versus, yeah, I heard this from somebody. That's a big difference in my mind. So thank you very much. And Peter, thank you, and have a very nice Easter tomorrow, and we'll be talking again next Saturday.
Thank you guys for having me on.
Thank you very much. If you want to come back up, of course, make sure you talk to Scott, and he'll bring you back if you have anything else you want to discuss. So thanks for being here, everyone.
And
have
Scott,
a happy Easter.
Happy Easter. And Scott, if you get any particular questions, you know where I'm at.
I certainly do. All right. Well, thanks again.
Perfect. Good night, everyone. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Building Fortunes Radio on buildingfortunesradio.com. Thanks for listening. Be sure to check us out every Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time for the designated Building Fortunes Radio segment with Peter Mingle. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website for our featured segments. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. At Building Fortunes Radio, we wish you the success you deserve and are willing to work for. So spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.